Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program Number 639. The aliens are coming! The aliens are coming! Not Part 2, being recorded on June 22nd of the year 2008. What we're going to listen to is For the Record Program Number 170, recorded on September 19th of the year 1999. We're going to go back 9 years into the archives.
Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to take a look at an article about something that is of great concern to me and something that might seem ludicrous to some members of the audience, namely the perversion of religion and philosophy for the purposes of recruiting people to the fascist cause. Now, again, this may seem strange or irrelevant. I would note in this regard that there is a very strong occult element involved with Nazism, something I've spoken about among other programs, The Ultimate Evil, Satanism, Mind Control, and the U.S. National Security Establishment, a four-part series available from Spitfire. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who has uncovered what appears to be, well, certainly a link between elements of the New Age and fascism and possibly to mind control experimentation either by the Central Intelligence Agency or perhaps, say, a subgroup within that. This, again, research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from a rather uneven publication called Fortean Times, F-O-R-T-E-A-N. Times, and this is from Fortean Times, issue number 126. This is not a publication that I know a great deal about. They appear to have some factual information and some hoo-ha, so it appears to be a fairly uneven publication. I'm neither endorsing nor condemning the publication by accessing this particular article. It appears to be uneven. It's also a publication I don't know a great deal about. It seems to specialize in the weird, etc. This is certainly weird, however, I think it also is more than a little sinister. This is entitled Plan 9 from Outer Space, and research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from Fortean Times, issue number 126, from October of 1999. And this concerns a channeling cult called the Nine, and it reads as follows. One New Age channeling cult, above all the rest, has had a huge, very disturbing influence on hundreds of thousands of devotees worldwide. Known as the Nine, its disciples include cutting-edge scientists, multimillionaire industrialists, and leading politicians. This exclusive extract, based on the Stargate conspiracy by Lynn Picknett and Cleve Prince, looks at the sinister origins of the Nine. By the way, I would note that the number Nine not only has occult significance, it was held as particularly significant in the Odinist religion, to which many Nazis and white supremacists subscribe. Quote, and it begins with a quote from one of these, quote, channelers. I would note that channeling is something that I don't believe in. I don't think it's a real phenomenon, but so please note that in passing here. Quote, I am the beginning. I am the end. I am the emissary. But the original time I was on the planet Earth was 34,000 of your years ago. I am the balance. And when I say I mean because I am an emissary for the Nine. It is not I, but it is the group. We are nine principles of the universe, yet together we are one, unquote. And the authors go on to say, the declaration above is typical of the channeled pronouncements of the Council of Nine, or just the Nine. They contain all the usual New Age ingredients of grandiose statements, shaky grammar, and unprovable predictions. But unlike all the other channeling cults, that of the Nine has serious clout. Perhaps the reason for this is that they claim to be the Aeneid, the nine major gods of ancient Egypt. Or could there be another reason, one that owes more to the X-Files than the pyramid texts? Although the Nine may appear to be quintessentially a modern phenomenon, our research uncovered its truly astonishing pedigree. In fact, the story begins nearly 50 years ago in a private research laboratory in Glen Cove, Maine, called the Round Table Foundation, run by a medical doctor named Andrea Puharich, P-U-H-A-R-I-C-H, also known as Henry K. Puharich. Set up in 1948 to research the paranormal, among the noted psychics studied at the foundation were the famous Irish medium Eileen Garrett and the Dutch clairvoyant Peter Hurkos, or Peter van der Herk. Prominent members included the influential philosopher and inventor Arthur M. Young and the socialite Alice Bouverie, née Astor. In December 1952, Buharich brought into his laboratory an Indian mystic named Dr. D.G. Vinod, V-I-N-O-D, who began to channel the nine, or the nine principles. In the months before Vinod returned to India, a group met regularly to hear the nine's channeled wisdom. Never known for their modesty, the nine proclaimed themselves to be God, stating, quote, "God is nobody else than we together, the nine principles of God," unquote. 3 years later, there appeared to be independent confirmation of their existence. In Mexico, Buharich and Young met Charles and Lillian Lougheed, that's spelled L-A-U-G-H-E-A-D, former Christian missionaries who were by then prominent in the burgeoning UFO contactee movement. For a description of their involvement in the Dorothy Martin Circle, see Jerome Clark's When Prophecy Failed in 40 and Times 117. Back in the States a few weeks later, Buharich received a letter from the Lougheeds containing messages received by their group's channeler. This message also claimed to come from the nine principles, even amazingly including references to the earlier communications transmitted through Dr. Vinod. Could the nine possibly be for real? Perhaps the answer is embedded in the career of Buharich himself. After disbanding the Roundtable Foundation in 1958, he worked for 10 years as an inventor of medical devices and achieved international recognition as a parapsychologist, most famously studying the Brazilian psychic surgeon Arrigo Jose Pedro de Freitas. But all that was to pale into insignificance because in 1971, Buharich discovered Uri Geller. At their first meetings in Tel Aviv in 1971, Buharich hypnotized Geller in an attempt to find out where his abilities came from. As a result, the young Israeli started to channel Spectra, an entity which claimed to be a conscious supercomputer aboard a spaceship. However, Buharich suggested to him that there might be a connection with the nine principles, and Spectra readily agreed that there was. The nine claimed that they had programmed Geller with his powers as a young child. Through Geller, the nine alerted Buharich to his life's mission, which was to use Geller's talents to alert the world to an imminent mass landing of spaceships that would bring representatives of the nine. However, Geller, by now an international psychic superstar, bowed out in 1973 and has resolutely turned his back on the nine ever since. Buharich had to find other channels. He joined up with aristocratic former racing driver Sir John Whitmore and Florida-based psychic and healer Phyllis Schlemmer, that's S-C-H-L-E-M-M-E-R. They found a new channeler, a Daytona cook known to history only by the pseudonym Bobby Horn, H-O-R-N-E, who lived to regret his dealings with the nine. Driven to the brink of suicide by their constant demands, he too dropped out of the scene, his despair being dismissed by Whitmore as, quote, "signs of instability," unquote. After this, Phyllis Schlemmer was appointed the authorized spokesperson for the entity known simply as Tom, who represented the Nine. Buharich, Whitmore, and Schlemmer then set up Lab 9 at Buharich's estate in Ossining, New York. The Nine's disciples included multimillionaire businessmen, many hiding behind pseudonyms, and including members of Canada's richest family, the Bronfmans. European nobility, scientists from the Stanford Research Institute, and at least one prominent political figure who was a personal friend of President Gerald Ford. We also know that Lyle Watson, then the darling of the alternative scene because of his seminal 1973 book Supernature, was involved, as was the influential counterculture guru Ira Einhorn and Gene Roddenberry, creator of Star Trek. Roddenberry was part of that circle in 1974 and 5, and even produced a screenplay for a movie about the Nine. How much he was influenced by them is unknown, although it is said that some of their concepts found their way into the early Star Trek movies and The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, What a Giveaway series. That parenthetical element is in the article. There is a character named Vinod, spelled the same way, by the way, in one Deep Space Nine episode. Another key player in Lab 9 was Dr. James J. Hurtak, H-U-R-T-A-K, who was appointed Buharich's second-in-command by the Nine. In fact, Hurtak had been independently channeling the Nine since 1973. Buharich and Whitmore commissioned British writer Stuart Holroyd, H-O-L-R-O-Y-D, to write an account of their adventures, which appeared in 1977 as Prelude to the Landing on Planet Earth, retitled Briefings for the Landing on Planet Earth in Paperback. In this extraordinary book, the true identity of the Nine and of Tom was finally revealed. Far from being the chummy character that his rather avuncular name suggests, Tom is actually Atum, A-T-U-M, the creator god of the ancient Egyptian religion of Heliopolis, and Uncle Tom with his eight mates are none other than the great Aeneid of Heliopolis. By the way, I would add, this is in their own estimation. I don't believe any of this stuff, and I'm being polite. I mean, I believe in the existence of these people, but I don't think they're channeling anybody from outer space. Continuing. But even with such impressive contacts, all was not well with Buharich. Lab 9 broke up in 1978 after a series of mysterious events that culminated in an arson attack on the Ossining estate, and he fled to Mexico, claiming that he was being persecuted by the CIA. He returned to the USA 2 years later and appears to have played no further part in the Nine story. He died in 1995 after falling down the stairs in his South Carolina home. Again, note the accidental death of Henri Buharich. Whether it was exactly that type of a death or whether there was more to it, I don't know. But I would encourage people to hold open the possibility that that may have been more than an accidental death. When people have been involved with fascism and or the intelligence community, it is, does not do much for one's longevity, and one needs to examine the untimely deaths of people involved with those milieu with a very critical eye. Continuing, after discussing the death of Buharich, the authors write, however, the Nine continued. Not only did Schlemmer and Whitmore continue their mission, but Dr. Hertog has also moved on. He has become a major player in the unfolding millennial drama currently being played out at Giza, but perhaps more importantly, he has established himself as a New Age guru par excellence, traveling the world giving workshops on his book of channeled revelations from the Nine, The Keys of Enoch. Written and laid out in classic biblical style, its darkly apocalyptic vision has huge numbers of influential devotees. This, we find very worrying. Another Nine channel, an Englishwoman named Jenny O'Connor, was introduced to the avant-garde Esalen Institute in San Francisco by Sir John Whitmore. I would add Esalen is actually a Big Sur in Northern California. It's not in San Francisco, so a slight factual correction there. Continuing, she and the Nine became so influential there that they held seminars and, unbelievably, were actually listed on the Institute's staff, even successfully ordering the sacking of its chief finance officer and the reorganization of its entire management structure. This should concern us because many influential people attended the Nine's Esalen seminars, including Russians who were part of the Institute's Soviet exchange program. Some of these later rose to prominence in the Gorbachev regime and were instrumental in the downfall of communism. I would add in Radio Free America program 36, the destabilization of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe, I analyzed the U.S. intelligence and German intelligence destabilization of the Soviet Union, the possibility that the quote Nine unquote may have been involved with such a destabilization effort is one that should not be too readily dismissed. Resuming again with the narrative, speaking of Russians who were involved with the Nine seminars, some of these later rose to prominence in the Gorbachev regime and were instrumental in the downfall of communism. The Esalen Institute now runs the U.S. branch of the Gorbachev Foundation. The Nine are very much still with us. One of their recent channels, who is also in contact with Tom, is the American writer David M. Myers, M-Y-E-R-S. He is the co-author with Britain's David S. Percy of that extraordinary tome, Two-Thirds, A History of the Galaxy and the Human Race, according to Myers' otherworldly contacts, who clearly have no sense of the absurd. Percy, best known as a champion of the face on Mars and the hoaxing of the Apollo moon landings, was at one time part of the Schlemmer Circle. Among the other major proponents of the monuments of Mars and their alleged connection with ancient Egypt is none other than Dr. James Hertog. The Nine's great prophet, who has promised this idea since as long ago as 1973, let me reread this last sentence, incorrectly punctuated. Among the other major proponents of the monuments of Mars and their alleged connection with ancient Egypt is none other than Dr. James Hertog, the Nine's great prophet, who has promoted this idea since as long ago as 1973. Richard C. Hoagland, H-O-A-G-L-A-N-D, familiar to 40 and Times readers as another unrepentant Mars face enthusiast, is also clearly under the Nine's spell. David Myers and David Percy were respectively American and European Director of Operations for Hoagland's Mars mission. In fact, his interpretation of the monuments of Mars comes directly from the Nine. Flake though he may appear, increasingly in these hallowed pages, but his influence over huge swaths of the hungrier mystery seekers is undeniable. This is the man who addresses rapt audiences at the United Nations. But it is in the New Age channeling circuit that the Nine have truly come into their own. In any other circles, their true agenda would no doubt have been rumbled long ago, but this is the New Age. Anything the Nine say must be sweetness and light, right? But an objective reading of their divine pronouncements reveal the first stirrings of something very nasty in paradise. Their words appeared in 1992 as the book The Only Planet of Choice, credited to transceiver Schlemmer and edited by Mary Bennett, a one-time member of the Schlemmer Circle, who also edited Myers and Percy's Two-Thirds. This has had an unprecedented influence over the New Age. According to Paulden Jenkins, P-A-L-D-E-N Jenkins, editor of an earlier edition of Only Planet, more and more New Age channeling groups are realizing that the real source of their wisdom is the Nine. In fact, we have discerned what amounts to a campaign. In fact, we have discerned what appears to amount to a campaign by the Nine or their adherents to take over the New Age. It would be a mistake to underestimate the economic or even political potential of this vast subculture. Rich pickings, indeed. But the Nine's influence does not extend merely to New Age channeling circles. Andrea Buharich, James Hertok, and Richard Hoagland have all lectured at the United Nations in New York. And individuals connected with the Nine are also known to have influence with Vice President Al Gore. Of course, if the Nine really are the ancient gods of Egypt, then surely there could be fewer, more significant events than their return. One may be justified in thinking that the more leading politicians who fall under their influence, the better. But are they really the ancient Aeneid of Egypt? I would add, the mere fact of adding this, asking that question, I take it as given that what the Nine is saying is at least superficially complete drivel. However, I suspect that they have a hidden agenda, and just what that hidden agenda is, I think, will become pretty clear very shortly. So I take this... could it be they're really the ancient Aeneid of Egypt? I take it as axiomatic that they're not. But that, I guess, reflects the difference in perspective between Fortean Times and Dave Emery. Continuing, one may be justified in thinking that the more leading politicians who fall under their influence, the better. But are they really the ancient Aeneid of Egypt? Can it be that they have actually returned to sort us all out, scattering love and enlightenment from their high moral ground? Tom, in The Only Planet of Choice, chooses his words carefully as he explains that all the races of the Earth were seeded from space gods except one, the indigenous race, unquote, the blacks. He is very careful to urge us not to make an issue out of this. After all, it's not the black race's fault that they have no divine spark like the rest of us. Perhaps the most disturbing aspect of the history of the Nine is its relationship to the career of Andrea Buharich. Recent research has revealed Buharich to have a distinctly sinister side. As an army doctor in the 1950s, he was deeply involved with the CIA's notorious MKUltra mind control project. He, together with the infamous Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, experimented with a variety of techniques to change or induce actual thought processes, even to creating the impression of voices in the head. These techniques included the use of drugs, hypnosis, and beaming radio signals directly into the subject's brain. And significantly, he was engaged in this work at exactly the same time that the Nine made their first appearance at the Round Table Foundation. The foundation itself is now known to have been largely funded by the Pentagon as a front for its medical and parapsychological research. Buharich was still working for the CIA in the early 1970s when he brought Uri Geller out of Israel. Buharich's use of hypnosis is particularly interesting in the Nine circle. In the case of Uri Geller and Bobby Horn, he first hypnotized them and then suggested that they were in touch with the Nine, and lo, they were. Ira Einhorn, a close associate of Buharich during the 1970s, confirmed to us that he believed that Buharich was humanly directing, unquote, the Nine communications. The evidence we have gathered strongly suggests that Tom and his fellow gods originated not in the stars, put behind closed doors as part of a CIA mind control experiment. And what happened to that experiment? Now, with hundreds of thousands of devotees, some in very high places, can the Nine be deemed a success? Of course, that depends very much on what the CIA had in mind. With their subtle racist propaganda, perhaps the flaky New Age Nine should worry the hell out of us. I agree with that last statement, not only because of this particular manifestation of irrationalism, because in general, it appears to me that this society is retreating into not only irrationalism, but those aspects of fundamentalist religion which appeal to irrationalism, and there is no shortage of those. And I think that not only fundamentalist Christians and others, but people involved with the New Age need to be particularly alert for fascist propaganda masquerading as New Age philosophy, and that would certainly appear to be the case with the Nine. I would note in this regard that Nazi mystic Julius Evola has become very influential in New Age circles, and also a guy named Albert Pike. That fellow Albert Pike had been a Confederate general and was in charge of military intelligence for the Confederate armies during the American Civil War. He also was the disciple of an occultist named Eliphas Levi, and he also, along with Nathan Bedford Forrest, another Confederate general and disciple of Eliphas Levi, founded the Ku Klux Klan. I was talking to someone about Albert Pike, and they said to me, well, are you sure it's the same Albert Pike? Albert Pike is very well respected in the metaphysical community. Well, be that as it may, he's also the co-founder of the Ku Klux Klan, and the use of New Age philosophy, like the use of fundamentalist Christianity and a fundamentalist religion of other denominations, is something that can be used to woo people to the Nazi cause, and I think people involved with New Age need to be particularly alert to those possibilities. Someone who has become very influential in New Age circles, or at least some of them, is a woman who went by the name of Savitri Devi, last name D-E-V-I. There's a book about Savitri Devi, who was an occultist and someone who subscribed to the Hindu-Aryan myth. She also became a major theoretician of post-World War II Nazism. There's a book about Savitri Devi by Nicholas Goodrick Clark, last name Goodrick-Clarke. That book is entitled Hitler's Priestess, subtitled Savitri Devi, the Hindu-Aryan Myth, and Neo-Nazism. The book was published in hardcover by New York University Press, copyright 1998. The ISBN number is 0-8147-3110-4. And there's a discussion of Savitri Devi, who was a mystic and who helped to forge links between Nazi philosophy and elements of the New Age. And we're going to discuss Savitri Devi in future broadcasts as well. Just a couple of passages from this particular book. Again, Hitler's Priestess by Nicholas Goodrick Clark. After discussing a presentation in Samizdat Publications of Savitri Devi's work, Samizdat is a Nazi publisher run by a fellow named Ernst Zundel, last name Z-U-U-M-L-O-T-N-D-E-L, who operates out of Toronto. After discussing an issue of Samizdat publishers of trafficking about of the philosophy and works of Savitri Devi, the author Nicholas Goodrick Clark goes on to comment, Samizdat's presentation of Savitri Devi was evidently part of this strategy designed to entice new audiences with the neo-Nazi message. Ancient mythology and pyramid secrets, Eastern religion, vegetarianism, and green ideas, the very currency of the burgeoning New Age with its interest in exotic religion, spiritual truths, and a worship of nature, could be exploited as bait for the young, unwary, or simply curious. By the late 1970s, the historical experience of the Third Reich was quickly receding into the past. As popular literature and films ably demonstrated, Nazism was becoming something mythical, even fantastic, and also plastic that could be molded and combined with novel associations and thereby given new meanings. By republishing the works of Savitri Devi, Zundel aimed to create a new cultic interest in Hitler, linking him to ancient mysteries, the world of nature, and powerful religious symbols drawn from the Orient. Her ideas have since built unlikely bridges between neo-Nazism and the New Age. Savitri Devi viewed nature in the Hindu fashion as a violent pageant of creation and destruction in which man held no special rights. A cloyingly sentimental love of animals stood in marked contrast to her misanthropic contempt for non-human Aryans, the weak and infirm. Himmler and Rosenberg, among other leading Nazis, also combined a concern for animals with their monstrous blueprints to eliminate all, quote, unworthy, unquote, human life. The Impeachment of Man, her book devoted to a thoroughgoing rejection of the man-centered creeds of Judaism and Christianity, was republished by the far-right Noontide Press in America in 1991. I would add that's a publishing arm of the Liberty Lobby. Continuing. Here, the brutality of social Darwinism meets both the green cult of nature and the antisocial excesses of, quote, animal rights, unquote, activists. Again, the amoral worship of beauty and force implicit in Nazi thinking finds new alliances with Hinduism, the cult of Shiva, and deep ecology, that radical current of ecological thought that condemns modern man as the scourge of nature. And then talking about her background, she was of Greek-English birth and did not live in Germany during World War II, and she actually spent her time in India, and spent the war years in India and actually married a Brahmin. And after discussing that, the author goes on to comment, during these years, Savitri Devi elaborated an extraordinary synthesis of Hindu religion and Nordic racial ideology involving the polar origin of the Aryans, the cycle of the ages, and the incarnation of the last avatar of Vishnu in Adolf Hitler. She regarded the Third Reich as, quote, the holy land of the West, the stronghold of regenerate Aryandom, unquote. Her ideas were actually representative of a certain section of high-caste Brahmin Indian society that hated the Raj and was impressed by Hitler's dramatic challenge of British imperial power. Such Indians were fascinated by the Nazi swastika, a holy Indian symbol, and fondly recalled the German tradition of Sanskrit scholarship since the early 19th century. However, it seemed unlikely that these ideas, so foreign to the actuality of National Socialism, could ever find supporters in the West. The situation changed with the total defeat and collapse of the Third Reich in 1945. In its wake, Savitri Devi pursued a long and busy career as a neo-Nazi apologist and ideologue in Europe. She was arrested by the British occupation forces in Germany for Nazi propaganda activities and imprisoned. Her extravagant Hitler cult, her Hindu Nordicist doctrine of the Aryan race, and unswerving loyalty to the Nazi cause found numerous devotees among her fellow prisoners and demoralized Germans. After her release, she befriended leading personalities of the Nazi regime such as the air ace Hans Ulrich Rudel and the commando leader Otto Skorzeny, who both played an active role in maintaining a global Nazi support network. She met with Nazi emigres and fugitives in Spain, Egypt, and the Middle East. She wrote books hymning the Third Reich and National Socialism, accounts of her propaganda campaign and detention, and a highly charged emotional memoir of her pilgrimage, unquote, to Hitler shrines and other places of Nazi association in Austria and Germany during the 1950s. Skipping down. Nor was her appeal confined to diehard German Nazis and survivors of the Third Reich. The existence of small but persistent neo-fascist and neo-Nazi movements after 1945 in Europe, the United States, and South America is a well-documented fact.
And you've been listening to For the Record program number 170, Plan 9 from Berchtesgaden, recorded on September 19th of 1999. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 639, The Aliens Are Coming, The Aliens Are Coming, Not Part 2, being recorded on June 22nd of the year 2008. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.